everybody. How are you today? I'm Karen Hartglass, right? And we're listening. I'm listening to myself speak. We're listening to It's All About Food. It's all about food. And I told you this last week. This week, today, is my 7th year anniversary doing this program, It's All About Food. 7 years! So let's have a little party right now, okay? Woo-hoo! Let's celebrate all the wonderful things we have discovered about food. And I'm so glad you've been with me on this discovery. Those of you who joined early in the game, and those of you who have stuck around, and those of you who are new to the party, I am so glad you're there. Because we are all needed in this journey to make this planet a better place. And every day, I don't want to talk about the bad stuff. You know, we had bad news this morning. I don't want to talk about anything bad. I want to talk about good. And if I mention something bad, there'll be like a silver lining story to it, okay? We have to focus on the good. There's so much good. And we are all a part of making that good. It's a balance, and we have to create the good. We have to bring people to the light, and food has so much to do with that. Okay, now let's... before we... get introduced to my first guest, I wanted to talk very briefly about water. Now, I've talked about this before. The most important thing for human beings is to breathe. When we can't breathe, a few minutes later, we're dead. We need to breathe, okay? So air, and hopefully cleaner air than dirtier air, is what we need to take into our bodies all the time. Breathing is really important. And when I get kind of down and out, I always like to think about breathing and what a wonderful thing that is. And sometimes there are bad smells, but very often I can discover in those breaths the good smells. And right now we're coming into spring here in New York, and that means lots of lovely good smells and fragrances from the lovely things on this planet, and this relationship that we have with plants. Because as humans, we put out all this carbon dioxide. That's kind of like our waste. And then the plants lovingly take it in and turn it into oxygen. It's a beautiful exchange, and we really need to take care of our plants a lot better. Okay, so that's air. The second thing is water, and today I just found out is World Water Day, at least according to the UN. I have a little water story. So I live in an apartment building in Queens, and usually when they're going to be doing some work, they slip a notice under our door, and we have a lot of leaks in our building. It's a post-World War II building, but it's, you know, it's not new, and they, from time to time, have to shut the water down. Well, today, we didn't get a notice under our door, and there was no water. And this is World Water Day! So, you know, when I do this show, a lot of times I do it from home, and I work from home, and there are a lot of benefits to that. You know, I can wear whatever I want when I work at home. But when I'm coming into the studio, and I'm going to be seeing some lovely guests, I want to look nice, I want to be clean. And there was no water. And I appreciate water very much. I take water very seriously. I talk about how it's important to drink tap water, but to clean that tap water effectively. And I promote distillation and a certain kind of distiller. Very passionate about water. And we should all have access. It's a human right to have access to clean, healthy water. So when I was without it, and it was for maybe an hour, which was not very long, but all of a sudden, it was devastating. Because I hadn't prepared for it, so I didn't have any extra water lying around. Now I thought, okay, how am I going to clean myself up? And I had these like towelettes, packaged towelettes from Gardein. You know the company that makes the vegan meat, Gardein. They had donated for a fundraiser we had not too long ago. Some coupons and these little packages that kind of looked like condoms. And they said, lose something like lose your vegan something or other. It was like lose your virginity or something, but it had something to do with being vegan. Anyway, I never used these things, and I thought, where are those things? And they came in very handy. And just about when I was finished, the water came on, which is a good thing. But I really realized in that moment how precious water is, how we don't appreciate it, how we're running out of it, why we're running out of it. That's a whole other show. And unfortunately, the UN on World Water Day is not talking about what I think is the most important thing, the most destructive thing to our water, which is animal agriculture. Those things need to change. But I'm very grateful to have access to water. Whew! All right, let's bring on my guest. This is going to be fun. Robin, I hope I say your name right. Robin Camille.
There you go, girl. There you got it.
Robin Camille. Well, you got a lot of extra consonants in there and vowels and everything. It's beautiful.
Yes. Thank you, dear.
I like any name that has a Y in it because my name has a Y in it, too. Yeah. Well, she's an activist, an author, actress, comedian, vocalist, radio personality, and relationship expert. And we're gonna hear her sassy style, I believe, in a moment. But it landed her appearances on numerous radio and television shows, including The Howard Stern Show and Bravo's Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. As an actress, Miss Camille has graced the silver screen in several independent films, including Bear City, the movie, and Violet Tendencies, starring Mindy Cohn of Facts of Life. Last summer, her monthly advice column, Dear Diva, was launched in Australia's top gay publication, DNA Magazine. She's also the official relationship expert for Playgirl. She was inspired to become an animal rights activist, and we're going to be talking quite a bit about that right now. After seeing the PSA Saving Lolita, which focused on the life of the orca Lolita, who has been held at the Miami Seaquarium for over 45 years, she saw the parallels between Lolita's story and her own family history in the Atlantic slave trade, and she wrote the song Let the Girl Go Free, Lolita. Let the Girl Go Free, Lolita. There we go, to help raise awareness about the orca. Now, welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi.
Robin. I'm so happy that we've made this happen.
Yes. How are you?
Good. You're all pink and sparkly today.
Yes, it's spring, dear. It's spring.
It's spring. Yeah.
Yes.
I got some bright blue on.
It works, honey.
It's got to be.
Works.
Color is really important.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, in New York especially, because New York, everybody seems to like to wear black everywhere.
Yes.
And
yes.
I sit on the subway, and it's, you know, it's very dark. I didn't take the subway today. I took the train, which was a treat. But I love wearing bright colors, especially in springtime.
Yes.
Now, we met, if you remember, at the Anti-Fur Society cruelty-free fashion show.
Yes, with John Bartlett. Yes.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
That reminds me. I got to contact John.
Yes.
I'm making a note.
Yes, make a note, girl. Make a note. No, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
The evening was a lot of fun. The fashion show was definitely a lot of fun. And you and Jane Velez Mistral were
doing our thing.
Doing your thing.
Yes, yes. And that was actually the debut of our song, Vegan Sexy. So that's why we had so much fun there. That was the first time that we had presented it live in public. So
okay, let's talk about Vegan Sexy.
Yes, yes.
Do you talk about, as the official relationship expert to Playgirl, do you have an opportunity to talk about Vegan Sexy?
Well, you know something? When my readers send me relationship questions in regards to Playgirl, they never discuss whether they're vegans or not. And that's something maybe I could bring up because, I mean, that can be a contentious point in a relationship if you're dating a non-vegan or you're trying to convert a vegan or show them the light, so to speak. Because I know one of my friends, she had gone to brunch with a couple of friends. One was a vegan. His girlfriend was a vegetarian. And she ate some eggs at brunch, and he flipped out on her in the middle of brunch. I mean, she reduced her to tears. So, yeah, honey. So I don't know how that relationship worked out. But, you know, it can be a little contentious. But, but you have to handle it. And you have to lead people to the light gently, honey. You can't bash them over the head.
No, and that's a hard lesson for a lot of people.
Yes, yes, yes.
I was on the Geraldo Live show back in 2007. Mm-hmm. So there was somebody in Australia mm-hmm. had come up, was getting a lot of press, mm-hmm. Saying that vegans didn't want to date meat eaters because they don't like the way they taste.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to kiss them.
Right.
And so they wanted to kind of play on this theme, and they were looking mm-hmm. for a vegan to talk about it. And I was the lucky one who okay. got interviewed. And, you know, there was some science mm-hmm. to eating animal products mm-hmm. and creating an odor.
Yes, yes.
So there are a few plant foods that do it too, but it's mm-hmm. mostly animal foods.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is something to it. And if yes. you aren't eating animal foods, mm-hmm. you can really smell it mm-hmm. on people who are.
Yes, and you feel different because I remember a friend of mine in Brooklyn. She had been a vegan for years. Her boyfriend, he was eating healthier. I mean, she was trying to steer him in the right direction. And she told me, when they had sex, she could tell when he was eating, you know.
Sure. Something.
Yeah, she could tell. She could tell. Her body felt different. It was a yes, because she had been a vegan for so many years that any little thing she could tell.
Now, I haven't watched or listened to Howard Stern mm-hmm. Just on occasion.
Yes.
But I remember him bringing on some, I think maybe it was one or two, mm-hmm. I don't remember, but these women who were raw foodists.
Mm-hmm.
And he did whatever was necessary in mm-hmm. the testing department to say that they were indeed, they tasted better
okay.
than meat eaters.
Okay. Oh, dear. Well, that's Howard for you.
But, yes. There's something to it.
Yes, there
okay,
is.
So
yes.
Let's back up a little. Let's talk about Saving Lolita
yes.
and how it changed your life.
Yes. Well, one of my friends, Dan Azarian, actually produced that public service announcement. And he also produced the film starring Dr. Ingrid Visser, A Day in the Life of Lolita. And he and I have been friends for years, and I had been familiar with his other film work, but this was the first time that I'd saw the PSA at a film festival. And when I saw it, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, my God. This is unreal, and I immediately saw the parallels, because you know, Amazing Grace was playing underneath it
yeah,
all, and I'm like, oh my God, am I the only one seeing this? And no, I'm not the only one seeing it, who saw the parallels. But when other people would bring it up, they would immediately be shouted down and called racist. But you can't call me a racist when my great great grandmother was a slave.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you can't throw that argument at me. We can agree to disagree, but you can't. That's one argument you can't throw at Ms. Robin Camille.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and what I find is that when people listen, they can see things too. When someone is taken from their home, they're sold for the profit, the sole profit of someone else. They are held captive there. That's a form of slavery. It is what it is. It is what it is, as we have white slavery, where you have young girls and boys being kidnapped and forced into prostitution. You call that white slavery. It is what it is. Of course, you don't downplay the Atlantic slave trade and the cruelty and brutality of that. But slavery can come in different forms.
Mm-hmm.
And
it still goes on today,
still goes
even
on.
In the United States of America.
Oh, it goes on all over the place. It goes on all over the place.
Well, humans mm-hmm. exploit.
Of course.
And there are many different shades
yes.
of exploitation.
Yes.
And
yes.
none of it is acceptable.
No, and it's never pretty, honey.
I think mm-hmm. when you stop eating animals
mm-hmm.
and when you realize we've been exploiting animals, mm-hmm. it opens your eyes to all the other exploitation that's going on.
Yes.
Not just to animals, but to our fellow human beings,
mm-hmm.
to all life on Earth, our
yes.
planet that
yes.
we've been raping and abusing.
Oh, preach, girl. I should have brought my tambourine. Yes, yes, yes. This abuse, abuse, abuse.
But and how come you didn't see it before? What was it in Lolita?
I don't know.
You
know something? I don't know. I had that aha moment. And I guess we all come to that aha moment at different times in our lives. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much information you get on a subject or where you are, but everyone has to have that particular aha moment in their own time and place. And no one can force it on you. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with an alcoholic. You can get them brochures for AA, honey, but if they ain't ready to go, they ain't going. So everyone has to come to that point in their own time. And that was my time.
Oh, well, I'm glad it was your time.
Yes,
the question
yes.
is, how do we get all 7 million of us?
Well, I think it's
on board.
Well, you know something. I think it's important
because it's time.
I know, girl, it's time. But I think it's important for people to continue to do projects like Save Lolita and other projects and get it out there so people can see. So, like me, a layman can have an aha moment. I think it's important. I think Blackfish was very important in other projects, just to let people know what's going on, letting them know the backstory, letting them know what these animals go through after they leave that marine park and how they got there in the first place. So those things are important. And that we are breaking down some barriers and opening some eyes and ears.
Right. So yes. What do you think about the changes that have been happening at SeaWorld?
Well, I mean, they're changes. They're positive changes. They had so much backlash. The stock was in the toilet, honey.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
and that's where changes
course,
made.
Of course, honey, in the pocketbook. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, with the during the civil rights movement, the whole bus boycott. The only reason they changed their stance in regards to a colored sitting in the back is because for that 18-month boycott, the buses went bankrupt. So it was like, oh, okay, I guess we can let them sit where they want,
because
we're about to go under here. So it's always about the money. You always hit them in the pocketbook, because if you try to go for the hard strings, honey, they have none.
Okay, so how do we get everybody mm-hmm. to just stop spending money
mm-hmm.
and saying, okay, we're ready. Mm-hmm. We want major change.
Yes.
Just so many people aren't ready to give up their convenience and their comfort.
No, people are not ready to. You know, it's a very difficult time, Karen, too, because people are bombarded with so many things in their lives right now. You know, when you don't know where your next dollar's coming from, the mortgage is due, you can't feed your children, you really don't have the mental capacity to focus on Lolita. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make you a bad person. That just means you're overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, people have to come into things in their own time. And when your back is up against the wall and you're fighting for your own survival, it's very difficult for you to look outside of that and fight for someone else's survival. You know, it's difficult. So I don't really, you know, berate people because, like I said, this is a very difficult time. And even with all that's going on and everything that people are going through, change is still occurring. So that's a good thing.
Right.
That's
change
a good
is
thing.
Still current.
Yes.
More people are struggling than ever.
That's right.
With the economy
yes.
and the lack of opportunity.
Exactly. But yeah. with that.
But good change is happening.
That's right. So can you imagine once this economy picks up, honey, we'll enlighten everybody in a minute, girl.
But, you know, sometimes we have to reach that bottom, that low
yes.
place in
yes.
order to really see what's going on and
yes.
see how you can make a difference and not only survive, but.
Yes.
But. Live with integrity.
Yes, yes. Well, it's very difficult, too, because not only are people overwhelmed with issues in terms of employment, the economy, trying to survive, you know, the media, the television, all Hollywood, these people, what they put out there, I mean, people are just, their minds are so saturated with crap. Like these reality shows, the Kardashians, all of that. And don't get me started on all this over-medication, honey,
mm-hmm.
okay? I mean, everybody's got a prescription for Xanax, lithium, Adderall, or something, honey. Everybody wants a
Everybody's depressed.
Everybody's depressed. Well, honey, listen, life is full of ebbs and flows.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to be happy all the time, but we've gotten into this pattern of wanting a quick fix every day. We want to be up all the time. You're not going to be up all the time, honey. You're not. That's life. But you deal with it and you move on. I mean, life is, you're up, you're down, you're up and you're down. That's fine. But there's not, you can't look for a pill to fix everything that's wrong with life. You know, there was actually, they were doing, I don't know which drug company it was because they're always coming out with something, that was trying to, doing some research on a pill for shyness. Now, okay, some people are shy. That is what it is. That's
mm-hmm.
just them. So now we have a pill for this and a pill for that. So, girl, it's just too many things. It's too many things. So people are over-medicated. They're stressed out and over-medicated. And basically, we've had the dummying down of our society. That's another reason why people are not aware of what's going on. Because when you're medicated, honey, you're taking four Xanax a day, honey. You don't see whales or anything unless you see one crawling in your living room. And it's because of all the damn medication and the glass of wine you're drunk. So it's difficult.
It's difficult. But let's talk about vegan sexy.
Yes, yes.
Because I think a lot of people like looking sexy and feeling sexy.
Yes.
So what is vegan sexy all about?
Well, you know something? Jane came to me and she's like, Robin, we need to write a song. We need to get a song together because, you know, you got to have a song. And that's the thing with even Lolita. You know, a lot of people have told me they've showed this to their friends who were like, didn't want to hear it before. And when they saw the song, I mean, heard the song and saw the video, it kind of, you know, got to them. Music has a way of being able to knock down doors that you wouldn't ordinarily get knocked down if you stood on a soapbox and preached.
Mm-hmm.
Because prior to the song I Ain't Gonna Play Sun City that was shown on MTV, no one knew what apartheid was. No one knew who Nelson Mandela was. But when that music video was shown on MTV and the song started being played on the radio and you had Bruce Springsteen and other stars being a part of that, that's when apartheid came to the forefront. People, no one knew that that system even existed.
Right.
And helped create the movement, or it was, the African National.
Has MTV been along around
that
long?
That's right, darling. That's right. So, yes, so that was as a result of that. So music has a way. So back to Vegan Sexy. You know, Jane says, listen, we need a song. Because, you know, you put it in a song, people can dance to it, and somehow or another, you know, the words and the lyrics will start getting in their head, you know? So it was a feel-good song for people who had already made that conversion and are currently vegans, and others who were possibly thinking about it, or those who may not be. But, you know, hey, when you're vegan, honey, you shine.
That's right.
Yes, you glow, girl. Yes.
Okay, now, when did this happen for you, your vegan epiphany?
Well, you know something? After I wrote the song for Lolita and we did the video, and you know, I started being very active in freeing her and participating in a lot of marches and things surrounding her freedom. I said to myself, I said, girl, now, you know, I had another aha moment. I said, now, girl, you can't sit up here and call her captors, you know, slave owners and talk about all of this, and you still have a dead animal on your plate. So I had to take a look in the mirror.
So it didn't happen.
No, not immediately.
Okay.
But I just, you know, another aha moment, honey. You know, sometimes you have to have those. Because like I said.
So how long ago was that?
It's been a year now.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's been a year. And it's been a gradual thing. You know, I let the chicken and the pork chops go first. You know, I come from a long line of pork eating, ham hock, collard green eating folks. I still eat my collard greens, but I gave up the ham hocks and no longer put meat in my greens. So it was an evolution, but I gave up the chicken and the pork first. I didn't eat beef too much anyway, but the chicken and the pork went first. The last issue was dairy, honey. I was still putting half and half in my milk, I mean in my tea until before Christmas. So it was an evolution.
Okay.
Yes.
Good for you. And how are you feeling now that you've made all these changes?
Oh, I feel great. I mean, I've lost a lot of weight.
Yep. How
nice is that? You know, you can be sexier as a slim vegan, a slimmer vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel better. But the weight loss was really, really, really important because I'd been struggling with my weight forever. Forever. Yes.
All right. Let's just go back to relationships because you are a relationship expert.
Yes.
And I think our food choices bring out some of our challenges with relationships.
Yes.
I mean, everybody has challenges with relationship, but when you're sitting at a table with someone at every meal, or at least one meal a day or something, if you're not in agreement with what's on the menu, it brings out all the issues that you have, all the communication issues and tension and stress, and it's important. And I mean, I commend people that don't eat the same, that manage to have a loving relationship, or people who have different philosophies or religions that manage to celebrate life together.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that.
Right. Right. And that's your thing. Everybody, everyone doesn't have to do that. It is what it is. You know, we all have our deal breakers, and that's okay. that's okay. That's okay. So it works for some people, you know, interfaith relationships, you know, relationships where you have a vegan and somebody who loves, you know, going down to the steakhouse and getting, you know, getting the steak. So
I know.
Exactly. It works for them. And they do say love conquers all, honey. So it can even, you know, and if it's working for them, then that's fine. Every relationship is different.
Okay. Yes. So we just have like a couple more minutes.
Yes.
And, so before you go, what are the most important animal activist kind of issues that are on your radar right now?
Well, freeing Lolita, because she is still in that tank, that substandard tank, the smallest in the country, wow, which is actually illegal. And, you know, with this 24-hour news cycle we have, it's very difficult to keep her story in the forefront. People have the attention span of gnats, so you constantly have to keep her story and her plight out there, which is very difficult. You know, for the last 10 years, you've had people every weekend in Florida and Miami that go down and protest and turn away cars, and they have been diehards in that. So it's still a struggle because she's still not free. So it's very difficult, and the struggle continues. But as my grandmother used to say, a steady drop of water will wear a hole in a rock. So we will get there.
Right. How can people find out more about Lolita, and what can they do?
Well, I think one of the things that they can do is to donate to the ARCA Network, which actually has her retirement plan.
The ARCA Network.
Yes, they have her retirement plan, because once she gets out of the tank, they've actually have a home for her back in in Washington State, because it's important, you know. Once you get her out, then you've got to have a plan, and they have a plan, her retirement plan, and you can find that on their website, theorcanetwork.org. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Robin,
yes.
It's so good to see you. I hope to see you again really soon,
yes,
because this was really crazy short.
Yes, that's fine, honey. And listen, if anyone has any drama, any relationship drama, they can email me at playgirladvice@gmail.com.
PlayGirlAdvice@gmail.com.
Yes.
Okay, that's fun.
Yes.
And can we find any of it online, or we have
of
to get
course,
the print magazine?
At PlayGirl.com.
Ooh, okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, happy spring.
Thank you, dear.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. Great. That was Robin Camille. And again, PlayGirlAdvice@gmail.com. I say take advantage of that. All righty. Very good. All right. Let's bring on my next guest. Okay, so it's Joe Cross, and Joe Cross is a filmmaker, entrepreneur, author, and wellness advocate. He directed, produced, and was the subject of the award-winning documentary Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. You can stick around if you like.
Oh, sure, why not?
Let's have a party.
Oh, okay.
I'm having a party, by the way, everybody. It's my 7th year here on It's All About Food. Today is my anniversary, so let's just keep celebrating and talk. I'm going to continue more about Joe here. This movie, Fat, Sick, Nearly Dead, was seen by more than 21 million people around the world, and the popular sequel, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead 2, authored the New York Times bestseller, The Reboot, with Joe Juice Diet Book, which has been released globally in multiple languages and is credited with having accelerated the plant-based eating movement by media outlets, including the Wall Street Journal, the Times of London, and the Dr. Oz Show. His website, rebootwithjoe.com, has become an integral meeting place for a community of more than 1.5 million rebooters worldwide. Woohoo! And today we're going to be talking about his new film, The Kids Menu. Joe Cross, welcome to It's All About Food.
Hey, Karen, nice to be on the show, and happy anniversary.
Thank you. Well, it's been 7 years, and you know, 5 years ago, I had you on this program. I was not as seasoned as I am today, and we talked about your first film. And I have all of my programs for the last 7 years archived at my nonprofit website, ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com, and yours is one of the top five that people continue to listen to. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's great, isn't it?
It is great. Awesome. Yes.
Well, must have been a good chat we had.
I think it was a great chat. Anyway, but you have a great message.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, well, I'm trying my best. You know, it's not easy to get the word out. But I think if you can create content that inspires, educates, but above all entertains, then that's you're a long way there, you know.
Oh, very important. Okay, it's been 5 years since we spoke last, so can you just give us all a brief update about what's gone on in the last 5 years? Before we talk about the movie?
I had no idea about, you know, what was going to come after this movie, Fat Sick and Nearly Dead, you know, launched. It's been a surprise to me more than probably anyone that there's been such a huge demand, a huge following, just as many people are watching it. And, I mean, I go to my Twitter feed, you know, I was just on it before, just posting out about this show, and there's already four or five messages in the last 7 hours, 5-6 hours of people that have watched the movie just last night for the first time and how it's going to change their life, or people on day 20 of a reboot or day 10 of a reboot of changing their life via plants, and, you know, predominantly starting with juice. So I made a second film, which is really a follow-up to the first film, which was to sort of give a sort of a 3-year update as to what's going on, people from the first movie, and also what's happened with respect to how important community is to make change.
Mm-hmm.
And that second film is very much about how this is such a difficult thing for us to all do, to make these changes, that just wanting to make change, while it's a great place to start, you know, there's lots of other factors that you need to take into consideration in terms of making sure those changes can be more permanent or be more lasting or be more effective, if you like. And what we found is that those who do things together and are in a support network and have community around them, they're far more successful than those that don't. And so we featured that in our second film, Fat Sick and Nearly Dead 2. And both these films, by the way, are on Netflix now for anyone listening. They can watch both of these films on Netflix. And so what we found in that second movie was we did a little scene there with a bunch of kids juicing, and that was a real sort of favorite spot, like in our data and all the people that were chatting. And whenever I did a public appearance on juicing or doing a talk or a book tour, you know, I always got questions, Karen, from the audience. What about the kids, Joe? What are we about the kids? What can we do about the next generation? So we thought that about 18 months ago when we sat down to work on our next project, which is the movie, which is just being about to be released on iTunes in about 10 days' time, the kids menu, we thought that was the logical place to go, which is, you know, we all know that there's a big problem with childhood obesity. I mean, you have to be living under a rock the last 15 years not to know about it. But, you know, what's been done? And rather than pointing out the problem of how, you know, bad things are, what we wanted to do was to perhaps shine some light on just the amazing grassroots activist things that are going on and that are happening. And so we went out and we, look, by the way, I'm sure there's many more than what we covered, but we did our best to give a sort of a broad view of what's happening in the US, predominantly the US, because I didn't have the budget to go to Australia or to the UK or France where I wanted to go and see what else is happening globally.
Okay, I was wondering about that. I did see the film, The Kids Menu, and you had mentioned in the beginning that, you know, you were acknowledging all the issues around the world, but the story was focused on the United States, and I thought, well, we have to hear about the rest of the world. But that takes money, doesn't it?
Unfortunately, the budget, you know, I mean, you know, I'm an independent. I fund the films myself, so it just costs a lot of money to go to other countries. And so, look, it's a pity because, you know, I wish we could do more, but what we thought we would do is at least show what's going on in the US. And given that you've seen the film, I mean, you know what I'm talking about in terms of that.
And I want to bring up some of the things that I liked in the film in just a moment. But I agree with you. Community is really important. What's frustrating to me is I've been trying to promote a healthy plant-based diet with different organizations and activism probably over 3 decades. And, you know, a lot of people appreciate the information. Some people get it, but it is so slow. And there are so many things in our system today that just work against us. And the solutions are really simple, and the benefits are huge, and you just want to get healthy plant foods in people's mouths. And the kids, when they understand it, they get it. It's – anyway, so this film is very important. And
I mean, on your point there, I understand your frustration, and I get that because I speak to lots of people that are like you that are out there doing their best to – to spread the word. I think what I've learned in doing this for the last, you know, I mean, I've been doing this for nearly 10 years, but really only on the public sort of front for when my first movie launched, which was July 2011. So it's coming up to a 5-year anniversary. So let's say I've been on the road for 5 years around the world talking about this subject. You know, I find that probably the most dangerous place to be in the world is between someone's hand and their mouth, Karen. It's a very dangerous place to be. And I think there is a real skill in terms of the way people with knowledge who are passionate about something communicate the message in their choice of words and the way they share their message. And I've met some people who are so passionate about this, who have all the great ideas, who just want to make a difference, but their delivery falls on deaf ears because it sounds like they are telling people, and they're like ordering, they're trying to get things done that just put people off. And so even though it's a great message, so I think that what I have found the most effective way of creating change is actually to come from this angle of not telling, but to show and to just do and to actually lead by example. And I have found that for all the people that I've seen that have been most effective, all the things that I've witnessed, that really does have the most power.
Be the change you want to see, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that's what you do, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it's just an interesting observation from the road. Because I do meet so many mothers and so many fathers and so many passionate people that just want to see this all happen tomorrow. And you and I both know that the world is set up against us from the big money out there in food, in pharmaceuticals, in just the whole way that the industry is set up. You know, these are huge hurdles to overcome. And it's not going to happen overnight, but I'm confident that over time it will happen.
Okay, let's talk about some of the things that you highlight in your film that have worked and are helping make the change. So one of the things you talk about is smart swaps, where you replace processed food with better whole plant food choices. How does that work, smart swaps?
Yeah, so just a caveat. These are things that we got people who were using to work. So in this particular film, this wasn't really Joe's ideas. Probably our first two movies were. I made a bit of a shift here to be like more like the reporter kind of on the journey. So that was smart swaps that were coming from a high school teacher you call it secondary? What do you call the middle school, right? Middle school.
Yeah, I call it junior high school out west. I think they call it middle school, yeah.
Right. So that was a middle school teacher, and she was not able to teach nutrition in her class. So what she decided to do was in a maths class, when she had to teach about percentages, and she would bring in nutrition discussion in terms of a percentage, like how much a percentage should you have of this or of that. And so what she was doing was she incorporated this idea of smart swaps in percentages. So get kids to think about maths, but to incorporate, hey, you know, instead of having a teeter tot, maybe we can have some hummus. Instead of having something like a Oreo, maybe we can bring in some carrots. And we don't need to do it all the time, but every now and then it would be fun at your habitual things, like at 5 o'clock or at 11 o'clock, when you normally have this, you switch that out. And that was where, that's where I think that teacher, was coming from in that point in the film.
Well, I love the idea of using the subject of food to teach the standards, math and history and science.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Anthony Ademas.
Yes, I do know that name.
Yeah, so about 20 years ago now, I think, she put out a 24-week curriculum. And it was groundbreaking, and I'm sorry to say that it's not in all the schools today. But what she did was she put together a 24-week curriculum to fit into the regular school plan using math examples and history and science. And then she put recipes together that used the USDA commodity foods that are approved to be used in the school lunch program and put healthy recipes together that kids could make in the classroom. And she had tremendous success with it, but, you know, it just didn't hit everywhere.
Yeah, look, and you know, it's a real shame that those sorts of things weren't brought in 20 years ago because...
Look at us today, yeah.
We predominantly identified three main areas of concern, Karen, that we saw. And they were, number one was this knowledge of what to eat and how to eat it, like how to prepare it, how to cook it. That was like number one. Number two was the access to mm-hmm. these types of foods. And number three were the healthy role models, if you like people within their own community of kids that they could look up to, whether it was mum or dad, whether it was an older brother or an older sister, whether it was some sports star or celebrity that kids looked up to. And having those role models, having the access, and then the education to not only know what to eat, but how to eat it, we found that those three hurdles were probably the biggest things we need to overcome if we're gonna win this battle.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I remember when I was in junior high school or middle school or whatever you want to call it, we had something called home economics. And yeah. The girls had to take it. I don't know why the girls took it separately from the boys, but the boys took shop, which I really wanted to take, and the girls took home ec, and we swapped. Only the girls had home ec longer, and boys had shop longer. But everybody got a taste of everything, and we didn't make the healthiest food in home economics. I remember we made a pound cake, which was full of eggs and butter, a disaster, and white flour food. But at least we were making something and learning what was in the foods. It was really important. And, you know, the schools have cut back so much that they can't offer home economics, which they really should, and shop, which they really should, and the arts, which they really should. And, you know, it gets the... You pointed out in the film that the schools are overstressed and they have economic challenges. And to add one more thing, nutrition, how do we do that?
Yeah. So, you know, look, I think that the one of the things that I think is interesting in this school system is that I actually find it quite hard to believe that we are spending time on algebra and integration and differentiation and, you know, certain aspects of the curriculum when kids are leaving, not understanding that the fact that fruits and vegetables come from the ground and what the value of the plants are and how to prepare them. You know, I have met, I don't know about you, Cam, but I have met so many people that have this incredible passion and intention to really want to try and improve their diet by eating more whole foods. But they go into the market, they go to a farmer's market, they go into the supermarket, they go to where the produce is, and as soon as they get there, they're just, it's like trying to read Chinese when they're English. They just don't know what to do, Karen.
Yeah.
They don't know how to do it. And you and I both know that if you don't make food that's going to be tasty, your family members, your kids, your loved ones are not going to eat it. So this idea of educating people how to prepare plant-based meals, and by the way, I'm not someone who's sitting here advocating that everyone needs to be only eating plant-based food. I'm a big fan of people enjoying their life and having what I call fun foods when they've earned their foods by having the essential foods. And I put the plant-based group in the essential, and I put the processed and the animal product in the fun. And I'm a big believer that people should choose to do how much fun and how much essential themselves, and that's their choice. So this idea of knowing what to do with the essential foods, this is the biggest hurdle that I found making this movie. Just how many people are not confident I've been able to make a great plant-based meal that's tasty. You and I both know, Karen, that you've got enough friends, and so do I. And I'm sure the way you cook is amazing.
You're correct. The way I cook is amazing, and I've got hundreds of recipes on my website. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure
And everybody's afraid to invite me over for dinner because I intimidate them.
Well, I'm sure that I could bring any family in America to your house tonight for dinner, and they would love you served up.
Absolutely. Okay? Mm-hmm.
So when you say before that the solutions are so simple, that's an example of something being very simple that if you have the knowledge, if you have the confidence to be in your own kitchen and prepare that meal and 40 or 50 others like it throughout a year, then you're right. It is, assuming that people can get the access and assuming that they have the funds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when you map all that together, you can get massive change. So I'm a big believer, you know, everybody I've met, I've never met anyone who doesn't know that fruits and vegetables are good for them. You know, never met anyone who doesn't know. So the knowing isn't the problem, it's the doing. And that's the bridge we've got to, that's the gap we've got to bridge and close up.
Okay. In this film, The Kids Menu, you show a lot of different activities that are going on. Like you said, you acted like a journalist and pointed out many wonderful things that people in communities are doing and what their solutions are. Farmers markets, rooftop gardens, school garden projects, teaching gardens. Again, you can't just grow the food. You have to know what to do with it and know how to make it. But sometimes when you grow it, that gives you even more motivation to want to know how to prepare it, because it's such – I think it's in our DNA. Growing food is just so thrilling.
Yeah, and the thing that's quite evident to me is that kids, and I'm now talking about kids because that's what we focused on, kids that are involved in the growing part, like putting the seeds in, doing the watering, actually nurturing, caring for it, and then harvesting those veggies, then taking them inside and knowing whether to put them into a blender or through a juicer or to saute them or to chop them. And that gold, that connection between their food and that nurturing, that is gold. So this investment in, now let's take it one step back. You don't have to grow it. You can take your kids down to the farmer's market, meet the farmers, talk about the farmers, maybe do a visit, maybe go to a visit to a farm, organize a visit. Then have the kids choose things that are going to be fun to sort of all buy at the market, and then go on YouTube. I mean, what kid doesn't know how to use YouTube, or go to your site or wherever and find some recipes and make it fun, make it inclusive, get the kids involved. That just seems to me to be one of the huge keys. Make it a fun event. Don't make it a healthy thing. Don't talk about it being good versus bad. Don't put it in this category where, you know, oh, this is good for you, you have to do this, and that you lose the fun. It has to be fun. It has to be exciting. It has to be interesting. Like, here's something we're going to try and do. For the next week, we're going to try and live just on plants like we did 1,000 years ago. Let's make it fun. Let's, you know. So this is the sort of way to engage the kids, in my humble opinion, of what I learned for the 18 months.
You know, there are some statistics that are coming out that talk about life expectancy, and some people have been reporting that the life expectancy is going to start going down with the next generation because our children are so unhealthy.
Yeah.
And it's just devastating. And I think we're starting to see it. We're seeing some celebrities die in their 60s. And I know family and friends, they're all experiencing some major health crisis right now. This is something that needs to change, and it needs to change today with our children.
Yeah, so Karen, here's some interesting data points for you on that. In the U.S., and I can talk about Australia, but, you know, I spend most of my time here, so the U.S. being the largest economy in the world is probably the best one to focus on. You have a healthcare bill coming this year. Now, what I mean, I don't mean like in front of the Senate. I mean a bill as in the total cost of all healthcare spend in the United States for 2016 is going to be in the ballpark of $3.3 trillion. That's the amount of money spent on healthcare, okay? That's $10,000 for every single person man, woman, and child in the country. That's just a spend for a 12-month period.
Wow.
This is 17 to 18% of the total GDP of the economy. This is unsustainable. You have 23 million people with type 2 diabetes. You have a further 90 million that are just one step away by the, what's called pre-diabetic. In other words, their blood sugar is right at that cusp of just going over. When people understand this terrible, you know, illness of diabetes type 2 and what that can do in terms of loss of limbs, blindness, anyone who's living with this knows just how frustrating it is. I mean, I tell people who've got it that it is possible that they can look at their diet and they may be lucky enough to be in the majority, which is that you can reverse it and get off the medicine and actually reverse diabetes with a plant-based diet. People are still shocked to hear that.
I know.
But the reality of what we're dealing with here is that forget about the life expectancy of the kids. I mean, that's the big point. But you know what? Let's talk about the actual quality of life they're going to have as opposed to just when they're going to die. I mean, let's talk about the average healthy life expectancy of an American today. An average healthy life expectancy of a male and a woman today is in their mid-60s in this country. In other words, you know, you're going to get to the mid-60 years of age living in 2016 and you're going to be on medication with a chronic illness. I mean, this is insanity.
Yeah,
70% of the diseases that we have today are caused by ourselves, our lifestyle choices. And that's whether you smoke or not, what you eat and drink, how much exercise you do or don't do, what your sleep is like, how connected you are in the community, and how you manage your stress levels. They're the big six factors. And so we have this is something that's going to break the bank. You know, I follow US politics. I follow what's going on, and I haven't heard a single candidate talk about this particular issue, which, you know, I know that terrorism is a big issue. I understand that. I mean, I know that people are suffering, and we've lost some people today in parts of the world, and it's tragic. But I'll tell you what, the amount of people that we're losing because of our own lifestyle choices when it comes to chronic disease and illness and heart disease and cancer and stroke and diabetes and emphysema, I mean, these numbers dwarf any numbers that happen in any other cause of death in the world.
We should be calling it domestic terrorism.
Well, we are, but we're doing it to ourselves.
And yeah.
So
child abuse.
And because of what I'm stating here now, because I've got into the numbers, we're actually talking about money, Karen, and that's why I'm optimistic. Because once it comes down to dollars, that's when the lawmakers need to find a solution, because that's what affects them. That's what affects them. And until you can find something that affects them, you won't get anything done at the top end of town. But you get a lot done at the bottom end and grassroots. And that's what we tried to show in the kids' menu about how effective just people at their homes, in their communities, at their schools, what they're doing and how amazing things are happening.
Okay, Joe, just let us know where we can see the kids' menu, where we can find it, because everybody needs to see it.
Sure. Well, it's going to be on iTunes. It releases on iTunes on April 1. I mean, I'm touring just, I've got three more cities to go. I'm in Philadelphia tonight. I'm in Boston tomorrow night. I'm in New York City on Thursday night. And they can go to thekidsmenumovie.com and they can see those touring dates and see how they can buy a ticket and come along. And I'll be doing a Q&A after each screening. And then after that, it's going to be on iTunes. And then Netflix will be later in the year. And so that we're excited because kids are coming to this movie. That's the great thing about the movie, the tour I've been on, is that kids as young as 7 and 8 are loving this movie. And that's something that brings a big, big smile on my face. The fact that 10-year-olds are actually really sitting through the 85-minute movie and loving it.
Right. Excellent. Well, Joe, you're making a powerful difference for all life on Earth. Thank you for that. And all the best with the kids' menu.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks for joining me. And it's All About Food, Joe Cross. Very good. Well, we just have a few minutes left, and I hope you all come out and see the kids' menu very soon. I thought it was a pretty good, engaging film, and get you inspired in one way or another in your community to go to farmers markets, plant gardens, teach about healthy food, get your kids in the kitchen, find the kitchen yourself. please. And if you find vegetables in the farmer's market or in the produce section and you don't know what they are and you don't know what to do with them, take a picture of them and email me at info@realmeals.org and I'll send you some recipes. How's that? Is that a plan? We all need to be helping each other because it's affecting everything on life, everything on earth, all life itself. I just wanted to mention a few things that came out recently in the PNAS.org, which stands for, oh gosh, I always look at PNAS and who knows what it stands for. Anyway, they have a brand new article out, which is outstanding, and a lot of media outlets have been spinning stories on the PNAS article. It's called Analysis and Valuation of the Health and Climate Change Co-Benefits of Dietary Change. This is a beautiful article. You can go to PNAS.org and download it. I recommend it. They have some great graphics where they show the difference between the standard American diet, vegetarian diets, and vegan diets in terms of deaths avoided and in terms of change in greenhouse gas emissions. And the vegan diet is like above and beyond the winner in under every category all around the world. They show the world. They show developed countries, developing countries, Western and high income and middle income and Latin America, all over the world. And the vegan diet wins out everywhere. And it goes into great detail. And it's a wonderful study. There have been other studies. And here's just one more reason. And it's connecting health and climate change. And there is no bad reason to eat a plant-based diet. It's all bonus. It's all good. The last thing I wanted to talk about is broccoli. Kind of frustrating to me when I see some scientific experiments come out. Oh, I just have 1 minute. I got to talk really fast. But it was in the Washington Post, I think. Anyway, it was an article about some studies done on rabbits eating broccoli and showing that it reduced arteriosclerosis and that this component sulforaphane in broccoli can really help. Now, we know broccoli is really healthy, but something that Dr. Michael Greger pointed out recently in his How Not to Die book is that these vegetables like broccoli have this component, sulforaphane, but if we cut and cook the vegetable right away, it doesn't create this powerful anti-cancer nutrient. What we have to do is chop the food and leave it for at least 45 minutes before cooking, or eat it raw, or sprinkle mustard powder on it. And this was fascinating information. And so when I see studies showing the effects of broccoli on rabbits and they don't realize these other important issues just kind of drives me crazy. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thanks for listening to It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Email me at info@realmeals.org. And remember, have a very delicious week.